It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
It's the first arrest that appears to be related to Russia's alleged meddling in last year's election. The Department of Justice announcing the arrest of an NSA contractor. Her name is Reality Lee Winner, 25 years old, from Augusta, Georgia, charged with removing and sharing classified materials with the media and leaking an NSA document that suggests Russia did try to hack our voting system just days before the election. The document was first published on the website The Intercept, and the Department of Justice and NSA are not commenting on it, but a U.S. government official did not dispute the document as authentic, according to our Catherine Herridge's reporting. House Oversight Chairman Jason Chaffetz last night, outraged by this development.
I don't care if you're Republican or Democrat, doesn't matter what administration. When you have classified information, you cannot put that out there just because you think it would be a good idea. I want people in handcuffs and I want to see people behind bars.
That same official also told Fox News that this information does not change the intelligence community's conclusion that Russian interference did not alter votes. This all comes as former FBI Director James Comey is set to testify Thursday, with the White House now not standing in the way. We may learn more about this particular document later today. And of course, it raises questions about the continued leaks in the intelligence community. A side note, Julian Assange is already tweeting support for this woman, Ms. Winner.
All right. Very interesting. Sandy Rios with you. That's Griff Jenkins from Fox and Friends this morning. And that is the news that probably happened. It sort of was breaking when some of you were still awake last night. But it is the big news this morning. The girl named Reality Winner, 25 years old, accused now of leaking information, top secret information, sending it to a press outlet called Intercept, in which the document alleges that Russia, it goes into great detail about how they tried to interfere with the elections, hacking techniques that I'm not ready to explain because I can't. Reality Winner, 25 years old. Now, here's what we know. She, according to the Daily Caller, she's a supporter of Bernie Sanders, also Bill Maher and Michael Moore. She loves the Women's March, the Islamic Society of North America, and she recently referred to President Trump as a piece of blank because of his position on the Dakota Access Pipeline. She was indicted in a federal court on Monday. She worked for an organization called Pluribus International, which is down in Augusta, Georgia, which, who knew, handles all this top secret information. FBI agents asked her, and she admitted that she was the one who did it. The federal complaint against Winner reveals that she stole the classified documents on May 9th, 4 days after they were published by the NSA, and she printed the report and sent it through a ground mail to The Intercept. And on May 30th, a reporter with the outlet contacted the NSA, inquiring about the documents. They also contacted the agency, the NSA, contacted the FBI, and of course then agents went out to visit her at her home. Okay, so that's the story. There's more, and you're going to be hearing more, but I have to tell you, this is just me. I haven't heard anyone say this. I haven't had time to listen to what people that I trust would say about it, but I smell a rat here. I just smell a rat, and maybe I'll be a fool here, but I'm going to step out and just say this. Now that we're in the midst of all of this, whatever, this information about Russia hacked the elections. Russia hacked the elections, and there's been no evidence to prove that. So suddenly now, when FBI Director Comey's going to testify on Thursday, suddenly a 25-year-old girl is arrested for like the center of the leaker, the person who's been leaking all this classified information. Now, I'm not saying they're saying she did that, but the story has been that people are leaking, people with inside information, the deep state, they're leaking this stuff. So now it's a 25-year-old girl that they've picked out first, and she has leaked documents that just so happen to sort of help the narrative that Russia tried to hack the elections. And it's happening right before Comey's testifying. And she just found these documents just a few weeks ago. Like, this is new information. No one knew this before May. And she's leaked them out, and she volunteered to the FBI. Yes, I was the one that did that. She's a Bernie Sanders supporter and likes Bill Maher and Michael Moore. She thinks she's a hero on this. Well, of course, the thing that occurs to me, and I'm sorry, conspiracy, yes, I just have to say, really, is this really the source of the great cavernous leaks? And really, so this leak just happens to be the one that helps the narrative that Comey was right. The FBI put all their energies into all the serious Russia problem, colluding with Trump on the elections. And this piece of evidence, this document, will probably help that narrative. And this little girl is who she is. She is a little girl. She's small. She's blonde, and I forgot how tall she is. They described her in great detail, but she's not tall. And so I just smell a rat. That's all. I just smell a rat. And of course, FBI Director Comey is going to testify before the Senate Intelligence Committee on Thursday. In fact, Catherine Herridge talked about that last night, and that's cut three. Let's listen.
President Trump decided against blocking fired FBI Director Comey's testimony Thursday before the Senate Intelligence Committee. Mr. Trump weighed his options over the weekend.
The president's power to assert executive privilege is very well established. However, in order to facilitate a swift and thorough examination of the facts sought by the Senate Intelligence Committee, President Trump will not assert executive privilege regarding James Comey's scheduled testimony.
On Fox News Sunday, a senior Republican on the Senate panel said he is not sure what to expect from Comey about his meetings with President Trump regarding the Russia case and memos where Comey documented their conversations.
What Comey says and how he says it, I think, will be important. I haven't, frankly, understood much of what Comey has done since about a year ago, and his decisions have been, I think, highly questionable.
The senior Democrat on the Senate Intelligence Committee says he wants to ask Comey, as well as top intelligence officials who will be testifying in advance of Thursday, about whether there is evidence of coordination between the Russians and Trump aides.
There is a lot of smoke. We have no smoking gun at this point, but there is a lot of smoke.
Republicans see the Wednesday hearing on surveillance differently.
These hearings that we're having are going to be so informative because they may find things that the Obama administration has done, that candidate Clinton had done.
Speaking to NBC News, the Russian president said he had no knowledge of meetings between his ambassador to Washington, Sergei Kislyak, and the Trump team.
I have no idea. I'm being completely honest with you. I don't know.
And Putin claimed no personal relationship with former National Security Advisor Mike Flynn, even though the two men were together at this December 2015 Moscow dinner.
When I came to the event for our company, Russia Today, and sat down at the table, next to me there was a gentleman sitting on one side. I made my speech. Then we talked about some other stuff, and I got up and left. I didn't even really talk to him. That's the extent of my acquaintance with Mr. Flynn.
Fox News confirms the Senate Intelligence Committee leadership hopes to talk with the special counsel Robert Mueller before Thursday's hearing to better understand what Comey can discuss publicly. They have already talked with the acting FBI director, and it is unlikely the committee will see the Comey memos before Thursday, Brett.
Okay, Catherine Herridge from Fox. So here's the thing. This is a lot of things to absorb, and it's hard to make it simple, so I'm going to try. The big thing they're trying to, meaning the left, wants to find in the Comey testimony is obstruction of justice on the part of Donald Trump so that they can have grounds to impeach him. It's as simple as that. And so that's why when Mark Warner said on television on Sunday there was no smoking gun, that's a pretty big admission. This is just a few days before Comey testifying, and the point is they have nothing. They have nothing to prove this. All of this, Trump colluded with the Russians to win the election. They have nothing on that. So suddenly this young girl, this is me, again, this is just me saying this. This young girl is suddenly arrested. The FBI suddenly found that she's, you know, one of the leakers. And it just so happened that she leaked this document that just evidently came out, was published, whatever, made public, made not made public, made available to people behind the scenes with top security clearances, that Russia, in great detail, tried to, you know, mess with our elections. And so suddenly this girl comes out here a few days before this. I'm just saying, in this climate where there is so much really chicanery is way too nice of a word. There's such dangerous deep state operations trying to destroy this president desperately. I just don't. I imagine all kinds of things. But we'll see with the conversation where it goes on this young girl. But Comey is going to testify, as we have said, on Thursday. Remember, he's going to testify about this conversation that he had with Donald Trump, in which Donald Trump said, so incriminating, I hope you can let this go. I hope you can let this go, meaning the charges against Lieutenant General Michael Flynn. I hope you can let this go. So that's the big thing. Was that obstruction of justice? And so is Comey going to testify that the president twisted his arm and told him he'd better not prosecute Michael Flynn? Or did he just simply say, I hope you can let this go, which might fall a little short of obstruction of justice? So, and you have to know that ABC and CBS are suspending programming to cover the hearing Thursday morning. Eager, can't wait to catch on tape this allegation, this hopeful, they hope that Trump will be guilty of obstruction of justice. This is what they are all suspending their regular programming for, which they never do. Very unusual, including the Variety.com. It reports on entertainment. And so this is really unusual for broadcasters. NBC hasn't decided yet whether they're going to do it. ABC's got George Stephanopoulos anchoring at 10 o'clock in the morning. And they're pulling out all the stops. They can't wait. They are hoping that Comey will show in his testimony that the president is guilty of obstruction of justice, because then they can get him. And I would say that former FBI Director Comey is probably motivated to do that too. Just saying. It seems like, based on the statements he's made since he was fired about he didn't want to shake hands with him. He hid behind a curtain. It's not that he had an opinion on Donald Trump or anything. He was certainly objective as the FBI director, right? Not so much. So the hearing is taking place. Now, the other thing that I think is actually going to end up being more interesting is that tomorrow, Wednesday, and Catherine alluded to this just briefly. She said Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein, who is the Deputy Attorney General that released the memo upon which President Trump, based his firing of Comey, is going to be testifying along with Dan Coats, the Director of National Intelligence, and FBI Director Acting Andrew McCabe, and National Security Agency Director Mike Rogers. So I think actually more is going to come out, to be honest with you, more interesting things. I don't mean good necessarily things, depending on your point of view. But I think that's what that's going to be the real interesting hearing. Because Comey, you know, as you've probably heard it explained, if he says that what Donald Trump said to him privately was obstruction of justice, then he's party to that because he did not report it. That would have been illegal. And he was the FBI director. And if he did not report on that, and he testified in Congress, actually quite to the contrary, that nothing had happened for the administration to try to stop them, to impede the investigation in any way, then he's incriminating himself. Oh, my goodness. My dad used to say, oh, what a tangled web we weave when first we practice to deceive. He said that to me all the time, and I never forgot it, by the way. All right, when we come back, we're going to talk about the executive orders on halting immigration or, you know, refugee resettlement or whatever by the president. So stay tuned. Sadie Rios in the morning on AFR Talk. Thank you.
A charitable gift annuity through the AFA Foundation is an excellent way to provide yourself with guaranteed permanent income while at the same time supporting the American Family Association. Here's what one supporter told us.
I very much want to see God's word continue into the next generation. This is a way I can help AFA spread the truth and promote their biblical stand. My experience with the AFA Foundation continues to remind me that I have a small part in helping AFA in the battle for our nation's values.
Financial planning is essential to your family. A charitable gift annuity through the AFA Foundation is one way you can support AFA and the health of our nation. The planners at the AFA Foundation are here to help you do the most with your finances. You can call us at 800-326-4543, extension 345, find us on Facebook, or email foundation@afa.net, and learn whether a charitable gift annuity is right for you.
A step-parent's job is never easy, and unfortunately, it only gets harder when your stepchild hits adolescence. Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. No matter how much loving care you give, all too often step-parents experience rejection and anger from their stepchild. A step-parent becomes the target of the teen's regret. She might even believe incorrectly that her life would be much happier and problem-free if you'd never come along. So if tensions are high right now between you and your step-teen, take heart. Though you can't force her to stop thinking the way she does, her feelings of loss won't go on forever. And one day, she'll understand the other side and see you as her solution, not her problem.
Mark Gregston has prepared a brand new resource to help parents draw their teens closer, not push them away. Download your free copy online at parentingtodaysteens.org.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with this Fox News and Commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Caitlin Bird. I'm a nursing major and I'm a junior. The School of Nursing here at TMU, it's different than any other, you know, university or college out there. Every time we come into class, no matter which nursing professor it is, we always begin in devotion and prayer, and we become a family. They actually allow the students to get up and do devotion and prayer. We pray with each other and for each other, and that's just what sets us apart from any other school of nursing out there.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
A Kansas City woman was ordered to remove an American flag flying from the balcony of her apartment. Problem! American flag on deck! That's what the letter said, written by the management of the Cordarella Ranch Apartments. Miss White is the daughter of a Vietnam War veteran and the stepmother of an active duty member of the military. She tells me she wanted to fly the flag to honor those who serve. She was given 24 hours to remove Old Glory or else the management would do it for her. So Miss White did as she was instructed and removed the flag. Now, to be clear, the owners of the apartment complex have a right to determine what renters can and cannot post from their balconies. They have a constitutional right to be unpatriotic. That being said, maybe Miss White ought to consider moving to an apartment complex that loves America and will allow patriotic citizens to proudly fly the red, white, and blue. I'm Todd Starnes.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
In his public appearances today, President Trump was all about his plans to reform America's air traffic control system. But the political Twitterverse was consumed with his morning tweet storm about his executive order on extreme vetting. The president writing, quote, "The Justice Department should ask for an expedited hearing of the watered-down travel ban before the Supreme Court and seek a much tougher version." Calling it a travel ban directly contradicted what his aides have said before, when they downplayed any notion that the executive order was a, quote, ban.
It's not a travel ban. It's a vetting system to keep America safe. That's it, plain and simple.
But the president doubled down in the language, tweeting this morning, quote, "People, the lawyers and the courts can call it whatever they want, but I am calling it what we need and what it is, a travel ban." Some people saw the tweets as potentially undermining the defense of the executive order the Department of Justice is taking to the Supreme Court. Kellyanne Conway's husband, George, who last week turned down a position in the DOJ civil section, took issue with the president's tweets, writing, quote, "These tweets may make some people feel better, but they certainly won't help the office of the Solicitor General get 5 votes in the Supreme Court, which is what actually matters. Sad." The White House seemed unconcerned that the president could jeopardize the court case.
Not at all. The president is very focused on exactly what that order spells out, and that's protecting Americans, protecting national security, and he has every constitutional authority to do that.
The president's tweets were in response to the weekend attacks in London. His point? That America needs to take stronger measures to defend against terror.
We renew our resolve, stronger than ever before, to protect the United States and its allies from a vile enemy that has waged war on innocent life and it's gone on too long. This bloodshed must end. This bloodshed will end.
All right, that was John Roberts on Fox. And I have to say to you that it is stunning to me to hear the political class, the chattering classes, consumed by the words in Donald Trump's tweets while missing the point that this president is probably the only serious person in the room right now trying to make America safe, trying to stop people from coming in here who would kill you and me and our children anywhere they found them, trying to actually do something about it. And so John Roberts and the rest of the chattering classes are consumed by the words in his tweets. All right, well, that's my view of it. Mark Krikorian is joining me. Mark is the executive director for the Center for Immigration Studies, and he may not agree with me, but I welcome his opinion. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning, Sandy. How are you?
Oh, I'm good. I'm good in spite of everything. Why the apoplexy over the word travel ban in a tweet?
Well, I mean, because anything, first of all, anything the president does is going to make the lefties apoplectic no matter what. I mean, that's almost par for the course. Though, you know, I mean, I got to agree with Kellyanne's husband on this. I don't think he's doing himself any favors. And specifically on this case that's going to come before the Supreme Court on the travel pause or the travel ban, which he's insisting to call it, the fact is the issue is way more important even than immigration. And look, I do immigration for a living. I mean, this is my job. But this case is about whether the American people are allowed to rule themselves, govern themselves, whether their elected officials in Congress and the president are allowed to decide which foreigners move here or whether judges who aren't elected by anybody get veto over immigration policy decisions. And, you know, anything that jeopardizes getting that fifth vote on the Supreme Court is a problem, because if the Supreme Court upholds these earlier Ninth Circuit and Fourth Circuit decisions, basically taking away the power of the American people to decide who moves to the United States, then we're in big trouble. I mean, that will be a milestone in the decline of the American Republic.
You know, Mark, I certainly do understand that. And I understand the importance of the use of words, but I guess I don't. I do think the emphasis is just wrong. I mean, they are consumed with the tweets, tearing. You know, even after the terrorist attack in London, they're parsing every word that he says, parsing the spelling of one word. I mean, it's really gotten silly. And I think the American people understand that, regardless of maybe his ill-chosen words or his exact wording, that his heart is in protecting America, and I think Americans get that message. And I also, you know, I don't see the point of Kellyanne's husband publicly tweeting. Could he not get a message to the president some other way, you think?
Yeah, I mean, that's a fair point. And, you know, obviously, when the president's opponents go berserk over everything he does every time, it really does make them, you know, sound like chicken littles and nobody's going to pay attention to them. I hope that's the case. You know, that stupid uproar over the president's typo, you know, that kafeife thing,
yes,
which was the most ridiculous thing ever, really does make the people harping on it look like morons. But in this specific instance, it doesn't matter what the public thinks overall. Really, this is about whether Anthony Kennedy, Supreme Court Justice Anthony Kennedy, votes for the American people or votes on the side of the leftists. I mean, that really is what it comes down to. And I got to say, this is, if he gets up in a bad mood, you know, on the morning of the decision, and these tweets color his decision and he votes the other way, you know, I don't mean to be melodramatic about it, but this is that will be one of the moments that historians 1,000 years from now will write about as one of the important steps along the way to the fall of the of Republican government in the United States. I mean, I don't want to exaggerate it, but I don't think I'm exaggerating. It is that important.
Oh, I agree. I totally agree with you, Mark. I totally agree. We are on the same team with this, and I think the president is too. I mean, a lot of people are, except the press is just crazy. They've just lost their collective minds. Now let me ask you, because I would really like to know what you think about this whole business of this second order being so much weaker, and if it is possible if it's even possible for the Justice Department to reinsert a more stringent ruling or a law wording on this particular. Is it too late to do that? Could they actually change the wording?
Probably, but I mean, they can always have further orders later. You know, once the Supreme Court, if it upholds the administration on this. But you know, remember, the whole travel ban thing is just a temporary pause. I mean, it's hitting the pause button for 3 or 4 months on various parts of refugee resettlement or travel from those 6 particular terrorist-ridden countries for the administration to basically be able to have a breather and tighten up vetting procedures. It's not even the whole policy. It's just a kind of temporary step along the way. Honestly, it's not the hill I would have chosen to die on. Andy McCarthy over at National Review has written that, frankly, the travel pause thing has become a distraction because the issue really is the vetting and the way we vet people, not just keeping terrorists out, but changing our vetting so that we keep out people who may be peaceful and pay their taxes and mow their lawn, but still think it's great to behead people who make cartoons of Mohammed. Well, we want vetting that keeps people like that out of the country, even if they're the most peaceful, wonderful people who call their mothers every Sunday. We don't want you here if you think it's okay to kill gays and behead apostates. And that's the issue, and the travel ban thing, in a sense, has become a distraction. I mean, we have to win it now, but I just wish the administration had gone about this a little more strategically, because if we lose this court case, we're up the creek without a paddle.
Yeah. You know, it needs to be pointed out. Of course, I know the laws of Great Britain and the European Union laws that supersede Great Britain's laws. Go figure how they got themselves. Well, maybe, I guess they still are in that mess. They haven't withdrawn from the European Union quite yet. And so the murderers of Saturday night in London were, at least two of them, came to England as refugees, so-called refugees, one from Pakistan and one from Libya. And they actually have gave so many signs. You know, one of them appeared in a video. I know you know this.
Yeah. The jihadi next door.
Yeah, the jihadi next door. He's in this video.
What do you have to do to get arrested in England for being a terrorist? I mean, if you're on a BBC documentary about jihadi next door and you're waving around the ISIS flag, it seems like that should be kind of a indicator that maybe somebody should be paying attention to you.
It really does show you how far, how lax, probably France too, Britain has become under these European Union rules. You know, Mark, what do you think if the EU goes ahead and does withdraw? I mean, if Britain withdraws from the EU according to Brexit, will they have the possibility then of changing their immigration policy at that point?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's one of the main reasons Brexit happened and people voted for it, because Britain was losing control over who got to move into their own country. I mean, and that really is one of the key elements of sovereignty. Who gets to decide who moves into your country? Is it the government in London, or was it the super government of the EU in Brussels? And so, yes, they will be able to exercise control. Now, they may not do it, or they may do it badly, but it'll be up to them, and it'll be on them, because they'll be the ones making the decision.
You know, interestingly enough, I'm sure you probably saw this too. I saw a story about the Czech Republic telling its citizens to arm themselves in order to be able to kill terrorists if they can't kill them themselves, because they said, you know, police may not be able to respond as quickly. And so the sales of arms are going up there. But then the second part of the story was, but the EU has just passed a pretty restrictive gun law, which will supersede whatever the Czech Republic does on this issue. So just as an illustration of why we don't want Big Brother in any form, whether it's the EU or a very big American government telling us what to do. It's just amazing.
Well, like they say, when seconds count, the police are minutes away. So there's no question that a lot of these Eastern European countries are probably going to start regretting joining the EU. You know, they're trying to force Hungary and Poland to allow mass settlement of Muslims from Africa and the Middle East. And their governments, their people are saying, not a chance. So you could see potentially more people pulling out of the EU once Britain gets out.
Yeah, well, I hope so. And then that brings me back to the whole notion here about the struggle over refugee resettlement here, which I know we've discussed before. I just talked to Ann Corcoran last week, Mark, who is, you know, Refugee Resettlement Watch. She's kind of a one-man army trying to cover this. But I know this is an issue that you're very concerned about, too. And her report was that under the Trump administration, there are thousands now of refugees who are going to be admitted, unvetted, into this country and placed in various states. What do you know about that?
Well, I mean, they are vetted. It's just that they're not vetted very well. I mean, all refugees who come here, these are people who we bring over rather than people who sneak in and ask for refugee status. Those are people we call, those are asylum seekers. Whereas refugees, and this is what Anne writes so copiously and knowledgeably about, are people we've gone abroad, the UNHCR has given a list, and they pick our refugees. But we do run their names through various databases, but obviously that's not very effective, because all that does is identify people who are already, you know, well-known active terrorists. It doesn't identify these kind of what they supposedly called lone wolves, even though we end up knowing about them once they're here, usually. But the fact is that we are taking significant numbers of refugees because, and this is, as I understand it, this is what happened. The president's pause on refugees was tied up in this travel ban case. And so because of that, even though the president has complete authority over how many refugees to bring into the country under the law, the State Department lawyers have said they have to, because the president's change in policy is tied up in the courts, the State Department has to just take as many refugees as Congress has appropriated money for. And Congress appropriated money to take in, refugees at the level Obama had set. This was in the bill they just
the Republican Congress. You mean that one, right? The Mitch McConnell, Paul.
Yeah,
Ryan,
yeah, the one
Congress.
That once we were told that there was a Republican majority, everything would be great. Well, you know, obviously not. So apparently, I can't render a judgment on whether that legal opinion is correct, but it seems to me Trump administration should have just said, we're just not going to do it. Sue us. And every day that they held out on that would be that many fewer refugees being admitted to the United States.
So are you saying you want them to do that?
I wish they would.
Yeah. Okay.
But they've decided not to, apparently.
Oh, wow. All right. One last thing with you, and this is not enough time to discuss this, but I guess I'm offering a sort of a dark congratulations for being included on the hate list by the SPLC. Center for Immigration Studies, they've got this picture of you where you look like a terrorist yourself. And now you join the ranks of many of us. We AFA is a hate group officially. And I'm on the watch list for women against Islam. It's really quite dangerous, isn't it, Mark? It's not funny.
Yeah, no, I mean, I try to make fun of it because mockery is the most powerful tool. And so I think it is important that we mock them. But you're right, it is a real, it's not, I mean, as I wrote on National Review last week, this isn't just a way of intimidating people. At this point, this really is a hit list, a literal hit list. After we've seen what happened at the Family Research Council and other places, this is dangerous, and somebody's going to get hurt at some point.
That's right, and so we have to push back, which we are, but I just wanted to point that out. All right, Mark Furian, Center for Immigration Studies, always a pleasure. Thank you, Mark.
And he is before all things, and in him all things hold together. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Corner. President Trump has announced, in order to fulfill his solemn duty to protect America and its citizens, the United States will withdraw from the Paris Climate Accord. This abomination was nothing more than a Marxist sprint to spread more of America's wealth and jobs around the world under the guise of protecting the planet. Withdrawing from the accord saved American taxpayers from shouldering a larger financial load than we already bear, and saved countless millions of American jobs that would have been lost due to punitive regulations from globalist environmentalists.
Visit the Hamilton Corner on the podcast page at AFR.net for more from Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Hey family, this is Lauren from Living Life with Lauren, and I want you to know just how much I appreciate you, and I count it an honor and a privilege to bring you interviews weekly with godly speakers, teachers, and authors that point us all to a closer walk with Jesus. Thank you for listening, telling your friends, downloading our podcast, and of course, connecting with me on Facebook, Living Life with Lauren, and Lauren Kitchen Stewart. I would love to hear from you. We're heard every Saturday evening at 8 Central Time on American Family Radio. Join us.
Consider serving with Friendships. It's an all-volunteer ministry providing aid to disaster victims, refugees, and the impoverished here at home and around the world. We're now taking applications. If you're available to serve without pay, you can be part of the crew reaching out to help people in need. Check it out at friendships.org or call 337-433-5022.
This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson. An elementary school in Fremont, Michigan, Daisy Brook, was in the news in the past few weeks, not only in West Michigan, but nationwide. The news was that Fremont Public Schools had canceled released Bible time due to a complaint from one parent, assisted, of course, by an all-too-ready civil rights organization, which was also in the news in the past few years for getting a cross on a hillside on public property removed. Such news can be disheartening to schools who allow for Release Bible Time. Release Time is a free ministry designed to provide biblical training for public school students throughout the U.S. As some news organizations are now finally reporting, Fremont Public Schools will resume Release Bible Time next year as they continue in compliance to the laws of the land. For all of those parents who express concern to the Fremont School Administration, good for you. Some things are especially worth standing up for. This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. The Bible says God took 6 days to create the world. 50 years ago today, His chosen people began a feat of biblical proportions. In 6 days, they remade their part of the world through a decisive military victory over an array of Arab enemies determined to destroy the Jewish state. Israel recaptured parts of the historic land of Israel, including high ground it could use to prevent future mortal threats to its nation. Israel's enemies, often joined by her friends, including the United States, have been trying to get her to surrender that strategic real estate ever since. Freedom-loving people should celebrate this anniversary that transformed Israel into a regional superpower, fully capable of defending herself and safeguarding Western civilization on its highly exposed eastern flank. It is in our vital interest to preserve her as such. Mazel tov, Israel. This is Frank Affney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
President Trump ignited a firestorm of criticism when he took aim at this statement from London's Mayor Sadiq Khan.
Londoners will see an increased police presence today and over the course of the next few days. No reason to be alarmed.
The president, who has been critical of Khan before, portrayed him as soft on terror, tweeting, quote, at least 7 dead and 48 wounded in terror attack. And Mayor of London says there is, quote, no reason to be alarmed.
The mayor's office took issue with the tweet in a statement calling it ill-informed, deliberately takes out of context his remarks urging Londoners not to be alarmed when they saw more police, including armed officers, on the streets. To which the president fired back, quote, pathetic excuse by London Mayor Sadiq Khan, who had to think fast on his no reason to be alarmed statement. Mainstream media is working hard to sell it.
British Prime Minister Theresa May didn't take kindly to the tweets against Khan, saying she thought it was wrong to be criticizing the mayor of London in the wake of these attacks. And the acting U.S. ambassador to the U.K. seemed to contradict the president when he tweeted out his support of Khan as a strong leader.
Okay, well, thank you, John, for that report. Sandy Rios with you, John Roberts on Fox. Yeah, I criticize John a lot because I think I know which team he plays for. And I have to say that there is probably a lot more to be said about the mayor of London, Sadiq Khan, the first Muslim mayor of London. Many have said he is soft on terror. You know, I don't know, but, you know, there have been three attacks in London in the last 3 months. And his advice was, you know, not to panic. And we also are seeing how the people, these attackers on Saturday night, were known. At least two of them were known. In fact, I'm going to sort of drill down on this. All I can say is the mayor of London, he may be, you know, fierce in handling this beautifully, but handling it beautifully just means, what, is he nice when he does press conferences? Does he do great tweets like the press wants him to do? Are his tweets more accurate? Are all the words properly spelled? Is that why he's doing a great job? Because when it comes to terror, he's not doing such a great job. Let me just say that 27-year-old Karam Shahzad Butt came to Britain as a child from Pakistan. Butt was featured, and we've mentioned this before today, but I'm going to mention it again, on a Channel 4 documentary called The Jihadis Next Door, in which he was seen displaying an Islamist flag and praying with other Muslim men in the park. And the same documentary featured another individual who sardonically laughs when he says that his Islamic views being in line with ISIS propaganda is just a coincidence. When asked if he supports ISIS, the man responds, no comment, before subsequently admitting that he would be arrested if he properly answered the question. There is a bare minimum of about 3,000 such people in the United Kingdom right now who've never been arrested or deported for the jihadist views because being politically correct is deemed to be more important than stopping terrorism, or maybe because they have a mayor in London named Sadiq Khan. I'm just saying, I have to tell you, I think Mr. Trump probably knows a great deal more about Mayor Sadiq Khan than he has said publicly, or that anyone has said publicly. But I digress. And so the second attacker is Rashid Dwadwan. Butt was a former security guard who was known by the police and M15. They opened an investigation on him in 2015. They said, at least according to the Mirror, the UK Mirror, that he had connections to Jihadi Sid and Jihadi Giant, who are well-known ISIS executioners. Did they just learn that in the last 24 hours, you think? I don't think so. And they also said that he had a security clearance. That's their own words. That's the Home Office approved SIA license issued last year while he was under investigation. He previously worked for the London Underground and KFC as an office manager. But listen, I have to tell you, and he did a barbecue in his yard that some said was kind of a celebration or a goodbye barbecue for, you know, before they killed people and then died themselves, you know, just a celebration. So, but Sadiq Khan, the mayor of London, is doing a great job. John Roberts is kind of ticked, you know, that the president should dare take him to task for saying people, you know, there's nothing to worry about. Now, just stay calm. Stay calm while, you know, your neighbors and friends and your little girls in Manchester are being killed at a concert. But stay calm. And so, you know, I think that President Trump's response is the correct response. You know, that's why that Katie, the London Daily Mail writer, who's taken such a hit after these terrorist attacks, is refreshing because she speaks from the heart. She speaks like normal people speak. When people are killed, they get upset. Unlike that reporter from MSNBC, I played the clip for you yesterday. He said he asked the question of a national security expert, is there such a thing as overreacting? Are the Brits maybe sending too many people in the street, too many police? Is it somehow just too much? It's an amazing thing. Easy for a person to say in the safety of a television studio thousands of miles away from the carnage. You know, my husband, who was a former FBI agent, made an observation last night. We were talking. He said they protect people too much from what these things really look like. He said these scenes are horrible. They're horrible. There's blood. There's carnage. There are body parts. And they protect everyone from seeing this so that eggheads in some studio thousands of miles away can say, are we doing too much to stop this? Are we just kind of sending too many police out and responding just too strongly? Have we gone over the line? That was really basically the question. It's really an unbelievable question. And, of course, Theresa May raised the question in her speech to the Prime Minister of England earlier this week. This is Tuesday, so it must have been yesterday. Boy, the days are long. They're filled with all kinds of information, and sometimes they seem like they are more than 24 hours. But Theresa May spoke over the weekend. We played it yesterday. She said that basically social media giants need to do more. They need to do more to fight terrorism. And she said extremism. And I commented yesterday to you that my fear on that is that the Europeans, when they say that and don't put Islamic extremism, they are including people like my friend Mark Krikorian for the Center for Immigration Studies, that hate group, and the AFA, who is now a hate group, and Family Research Council. Extremism, we are the extremists. And if you don't think they don't consider us as extremists in Europe, I can tell you, I guarantee you they do. I hear from other countries, I hear from other people in other countries, and they think that things that I say are just absolutely horrendous because they've been raised in a completely different atmosphere. Their minds are numbed, and so are their responses to these kinds of acts. They're more outraged at tweets and comments that perhaps marriage should be between one man and one woman, or comments that we should be allowed to protect ourselves with guns. That those things outrage them, but these killings, not so much. And so it's an amazing thing. So I am concerned when they start talking about social media giants reining in, quote-unquote, extremism. But if they're saying Islam extremism, I'm all on board. And Ted Cruz weighed in yesterday, did what he always does. Powerhouse that he is. He was on with Neil Cavuto, and he extrapolated on this. Let's listen.
Privacy matters a great deal, but the First Amendment, our privacy protections protect Americans in the United States of America. They don't protect foreign terrorists overseas. Foreign terrorists overseas, we can use every tool we have to intercept their communications. And you know, Neil, the thing that is maddening is with terror attack after terror attack after terror attack, whether Nidal Hassan at Fort Hood, whether the Tsarnaev brothers, the Boston Marathon bombers, whether it was the Orlando nightclub terrorist, the government has had the communications. It's intercepted the communications, and it knew about the threat before it occurred. But the administration was unwilling to act because of fears of political correctness. You know, I chaired a hearing in the Senate on the willful blindness of the Obama administration, where the Department of Homeland Security had undergone a purge, and the White House used that term purge, to alter or delete over 800 records to remove references to radical Islam or the Muslim Brotherhood. Listen, that doesn't make any sense to be ignoring the red flags we see. We can protect privacy of American citizens here at home. We do a good job of that. But at the same time, we've got to be clear-eyed about the threat we face abroad to prevent horrific attacks like the ones we've seen in the UK.
Of course, I think he's talking about the Surveillance Act that's going to come up for reauthorization. And he's right. You know, right-thinking people should be able to distinguish, give the NSA and other national security organizations, or national security agencies, 17 of them, the right kinds of tools to actually stop terrorism without banishing them from any kind of ability to do their job. And that's kind of what he's trying to explain. And then, of course, he alludes to the thing that you've heard me say many, many times, and that is that under Barack Obama and his administration, these references, and it started under Bush, references to jihad and Islamic terrorism and Sharia law have been purged from the manuals, the training manuals of the FBI. They've been purged from manuals training generals. And I saw Oh, wow. I just thought of this. I saw a man who is allegedly on staff at West Point in a discussion with an anchor. I don't remember who it was. And the things he was saying were just astounding. Just the whole politically correct line about Islam not being a, you know, this being an aberration of Islam. And I'm thinking, he is lecturing at West Point. And that's not by an accident. That was, thank you, President Obama, for making sure that friendlies of the Muslim Brotherhood and the Islamists were placed in strategic positions in the Pentagon, also in the FBI, advising, you know, like when that a terror event took place in Orlando and all those people were killed in the nightclub, the FBI, you know, needed members of the Muslim Brotherhood or the of CARE, which is the PR arm of the Muslim Brotherhood, to come in and help them do interviews with suspects, you know, just so they know the right questions and who to talk to and who not to talk to, because that's what we need is more Muslim outreach. That's the problem. If we had more Muslim outreach, why, we would be safer. It was funny. I saw, there's not funny. There's a imam from Scotland, and he's basically saying that, let's see, the Manchester bombing was an inevitable consequence of British foreign and domestic policy toward Muslims. And his solution, he said, the British government needs to take a number of steps to appease terrorists if they want to see an end to the attacks on its soil, including the release of Muslim prisoners and the removal of British forces from Muslim lands. So, and then he says, why should we care when the table turns? Do they think they can prod a hornet's nest and not get stung? So this Scottish Muslim preacher, of course, is still wandering around preaching. He lives in England now, but he's got the solution. Just, you know, more Muslim dialogue. Let the Muslim, anybody that's suspected, out. Stop. You know, that's what London has been doing. The mayor, Sadiq Khan, you know, who is really good mayor. Remember that the president of the United States, Donald Trump, is all wrong about him. He's just great. He's just hit just the right tone. And he struck just the right balance in London so that he doesn't upset the Muslim community by actually arresting people who have been appearing in films as jihadis, you know, claiming, waving the ISIS flag. I mean, he's overseeing the whole thing, and he's done a really great job, don't you think? All right, well, back to the social media thing. An article in the Wall Street Journal goes into great detail about the complications for Facebook and YouTube and others and kind of tracking their promotion, whether wittingly or unwittingly, of these jihadists. Much of the activity, they say, like radical sermons or videos that use coded language, falls in the gray area that makes it difficult to track, possibly protected by the company's aim to protect free speech. They say that terrorists use the major platforms to initially recruit, but then they peel people off and sort of assign them to more personal and then encrypted messages as well. YouTube had a 20-second YouTube video explaining how to carry out a truck attack. It was viewed by more than 360 times Monday evening since it was posted on Sunday. It suggested using a double-wheel load-bearing truck to attack large outdoor festivals, conventions, celebrations, and parades. And so the video, Rick Eaton, a researcher at the Simon Wiesenthal Center, he flagged the video twice, he said. The video was finally pulled after the Wall Street Journal asked them to do it around 6:15 Eastern Standard Time on Monday. So this is the kind of thing that's happening. There are a lot more things to say about this Wall Street Journal article because they talk about Facebook also. It is difficult for them to do it, but I believe they can too. And that's what, hopefully, that's what Prime Minister May was really talking about. Not organizations that have extreme views on moral issues, like view the world the way God views it. So we'll see how this thing plays out. You know, we'll be talking about it. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.